Hi, everyone. It's your host, Amy Geckel, and we are here with Entry 10 of the Eating Disorder Diaries, a podcast about my 16-year experience with bulimia and my life in recovery. It's now July. Can't believe summer's already here. Yesterday, I dropped my fiance, Brendan, off at the airport for a family trip he's going on, and I had the next 2 weekends to myself, which is amazing. But I literally love his family, so I'm bummed that I'm not there. Miss you guys. But I figured I could use the time to work on the pod. Today I woke up early like I always do, did the non-negotiable morning routine, meditating, journaling, water, coffee, you know the deal. Then I packed up my things with my two dogs and we spent the day in Frisco, Colorado, which is right outside of Breckenridge, if you're familiar. I have not been able to get into the mountains as much as I would love to have been this summer, but we're changing that. Brendan has a raft. He's big into whitewater rafting, hiking in the summer, so we'll definitely do more of that, but I hate driving in the mountains by myself. I just don't like the steep grade of the highway. It kind of freaks me out, even though admittedly I'm a pretty aggressive driver, but I barely drive anymore because I work from home. So today was an accomplishment. We did a little hike. I forced my dogs to take pictures with wildflowers stuck behind their ears. I'm sure I'll post them on Instagram. They're so cute. They're honestly my best friends. And yeah, we just kind of hung out a bit, and now we're back home in Denver. I just bought a ticket to go see the new Jennifer Lawrence movie later. Really just embracing the solo alone time. I think both me and Brendan are like that in a lot of ways. When we're alone, we're pretty good at just doing our own thing, which is nice. Also a plus, if you're liking the podcast, more solo time for me means I'm going to be spending more time working on episodes. Season one is in full swing and we've got more episodes coming. So today's episode features a very special guest. You may know him already as a co-host of the Docs Who Lived podcast, but today I'm interviewing Dr. Carl Nadolski, an endocrinologist based out of Michigan who specializes in obesity medicine. He has quite the loyal following, both he and his brother do. I'm one of their loyal followers. In one of his more recent posts about the intersection of childhood trauma relating to weight gain and or obesity in his patients really caught my attention. Today's episode is going to dive more into that and Dr. Carl's thoughts around that. I was also interviewed for Dr. Carl and Dr. Spencer's podcast, Docs Who Lift. So if you go subscribe to them, you'll be notified when my episode comes out. I'm really excited for it. You can also follow Dr. Carl on Instagram, Twitter, at Dr. Carl Nadolski. I'll put his handle in the show notes as well as a link to the podcast. He's definitely a good follow if you're someone who's interested in, I'll use his words, debunking the quackery and learning more about a holistic approach to healing from the inside out. I'm excited for you guys to listen to this. So without further ado, let's get into entry 10, Dr. Carl Nadolski on childhood trauma relating to obesity and disordered eating. Dr. Carl Nadolski, welcome to the Eating Disorder Diaries.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on. Tell me more about your background and what a day in the life looks like for an endocrinologist in Holland, Michigan.
Sure thing. So a little background is I grew up with parents who were teachers, so very academically inclined, but also with a lot of sports. My mom was a sailor. My dad coached wrestling and football. So I did all those sports, did a lot of working out, was very into, you know, nutrition, exercise science, did kinesiology, essentially exercise physiology as my undergrad degree at Michigan State. I was on the wrestling team there and went on to med school with a lot of that as my background, leading me to want to help people with, you know, health and wellness from the physician perspective. And so that background really kind of drove me toward obesity and diabetes. And with that, I actually have an aunt, my mom's younger sister, who is a cardiologist. And she said, oh, that sounds like endocrinology. So when I paid attention to the endocrine month in med school, and there are some funky things in endocrinology, the study of hormones, but it just happened to make sense to me, and it didn't always make sense to other people. So that was maybe just a kind of a lucky break. And so then I went into internal medicine residency with the Navy, did that for a few years. Before going on to fellowship, I actually got certified by the American Board of Obesity Medicine after my residency, and started doing obesity medicine for the Navy before then going on to endocrine fellowship at Walter Reed in Bethesda, the National Military Medical Center. And then I've been involved in some national organizations for endocrine obesity treatment. Helped with some guideline writing and all that kind of thing. And so in endocrinology here, I do general endocrinology. So that ranges from pituitary disorders to thyroid, adrenal glands, calcium bone metabolism type stuff, and then certainly obesity and cardiometabolic disease. So type 2 diabetes, prediabetes, heart disease risk, kidney disease risk, fatty liver, and all those things are kind of my special subspecialty, I guess.
You have a lot going on. I'm also a Spartan alumni. I'm originally from East Lansing myself. So
love it.
Go green.
Go white.
So I follow you on social media, and a lot of your recent posts have gotten my attention. Mm-hmm. In particular, there was a post, it was a tweet of yours about childhood trauma and how that mm-hmm. relates to disordered eating. And for my listeners, I just want to read the tweet so I can get more of your thoughts on it. So
sure.
Verbatim, it says, a psychosocial history during a weight history when seeing people with obesity can really be enlightening to significant childhood trauma directly related to subsequent disordered eating, et cetera. It's important for clinicians to have awareness as well as patients to discuss. When I read this, I immediately messaged you because mm-hmm. I wanted to pick your brain on it more, because I can draw a lot of parallels from that tweet to my mm-hmm. own story and the reason that I'm starting this podcast, because I'm here talking about my experience with bulimia and disordered eating mm-hmm. and childhood trauma myself and how I have been able to heal from those things, because I know there are many other people in the world that are suffering, and I want to share what I've learned and hopefully help them out. So
yeah.
Can you go into more detail about this tweet and what your thoughts are on it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's obviously complex, and it's hard to, get to into all the weeds in just one conversation. And I'm not a psychologist and I'm not a psychiatrist. So some of the psychological aspects of this are certainly out of my wheelhouse. But, it's kind of interesting in medicine, in mainstream medical school, even undergrad medical school, residency training and fellowship, we are always taught to emphasize evaluating and treating the whole person, mind, body, even spirit kind of stuff, right? Mental health, nutrition, exercise, sleep, stress reduction, in addition to digging into the root cause. I also, share a lot on social media about how kind of the quacks have hijacked the term holistic, but literally we all need to be very holistic. But it is very hard to be, especially when it starts getting out of a comfort realm. But as we've learned more about obesity, and certainly it's been discussed a lot in type 2 diabetes, we always should be performing a weight history. So that's kind of one part of that. But we also have to be very cognizant of people's mental health. And we know that things from the past are causing struggles in people's adult lives or even in their childhood lives. But we don't always get to that. It's hard, especially the way our healthcare system is. It's dysfunctional. We all know it. The way we get paid and all this other stuff is dysfunctional. And so people don't have enough time. Primary care doctors are the front line. They really should theoretically be the ones really knowing about people's history and things like trauma that might be triggering disordered eating, mental health struggles, ultimately leading to physical problems like obesity and metabolic disease and whatnot. And so, I feel like we all are kind of aware of that. But as I have tried hard to do more like really good weight histories, it often ends up exposing these things. So even though it's a weight history, let's say, for example, I recall this specific tweet, and I do get these every once in a while, every week, it seems like there's somebody where it uncovers it. We're going through the weight history, and everything seems fine until, I was 13 And I started gaining weight after that. And I said, okay, well, you know, what was going on then? Medications, life events. And without specifically asking, and because I don't necessarily feel qualified to ask directly about like childhood trauma per se, but I know it's out there. And so then once in a while they say, well, you know, I had something bad happen. And I say, well, you know, if you feel comfortable, tell me. And God, it just breaks my heart more often than not. I can't believe how often it is. They say, well, you know, I was sexually abused when I was 12 or 13 or something. And then everyone seems different to that, right? And they respond differently. And it drives certainly mental health struggles and sometimes leads to whatever it is, disordered eating. It could be binge eating disorder. It could be some of them have literally described not wanting to be physically attractive. And almost like they're trying to gain weight, but sometimes it's subconscious. And again, the psychological stuff with that goes beyond my wheelhouse, but I think it's important to acknowledge and support them and say, I gotcha. And use our resources, you know, get them into good psychology, get them into a dietitian who has some background in maybe some disordered eating and kind of help bridge that gap. And really, if nothing else, just be understanding. And then from my perspective, obviously, it helps when we talk about dietary efforts. You know, certainly we focus more on the health, you know, their physical health, their mental health. And I always tell them, I tell everyone this, that it's literally what's on the inside that counts, both mentally and physically. And their weight, quote unquote, weight is not actually what we care about. We can talk about weight reduction and how that is a good surrogate for some health benefits. But in those cases, I really think it's important to really maybe minimize or maybe not even talk about the literal weight on the scale and focus very much more on the health. You know, and then another psychological aspect that I've learned a lot about recently because I've done a lot of work on it recently is the internalized weight bias and stigma that people feel. And I feel like there's probably, you know, a lot of interconnection, interplay there too. And so sometimes just acknowledging it, I may not be able to necessarily fix that issue. We actually just, our last week's Docs Who Lift podcast, we had an expert psychologist who has done research in the realm of treating people with internalized weight bias and stigma. And again, that bridges into kind of what we're talking about too.
Absolutely. I love that you bring up that the word holistic just feels like it's all the buzzword right now. Mm-hmm. Everyone's kind of throwing it around, but a lot of what I've talked about in my previous episodes is wanting to be holistic with my healing and get to the root cause of all of my issues because, you know, it goes back from when I was 13 as well. So I appreciate what you're saying there for sure. If you have a patient that's coming to you and is confiding in you that they're struggling with an eating disorder based on, you know, whether you're taking their weight mm-hmm. history or just coming to see you, I know you mentioned, you know, getting them into referring them to a psychologist, referring them to a dietitian. Is that usually your approach? Do you have any other suggestions if a patient were to come to you and confides in you?
Yeah, certainly. You know, we do have some medical therapies that are actually really good for some things. Now, they're probably not seeing me if they are suffering from anorexia necessarily. Usually it's going to be obesity and some disordered eating that led to that, which often can include binge eating disorder. We do actually have some very good medications that can help with that. And I just talk to them and say, look, we have a very complex biology on top of our genetic foundation with a bunch of environmental things that gets thrown at us and complicates things. And now we're struggling with the weight that causes harm. But we do have medications that can help. And specifically if they have, you know, binge eating type criteria, or at least that, you know, sort of trend towards that. We have some medications that actually work very well for that. And not only do they result in weight loss and metabolic or other health benefits, but they make the people maybe feel better too. They don't feel as out of control, because part of binge eating is then they feel out of control. They feel guilty. They're doing it in hiding, and it can help just minimize that, the episodes of binging, where then that causes, it's like a vicious cycle of mental health disturbances. So I talk to them about that. I mean, that's my job. You know, I talk about nutrition, exercise, but, you know, I have to be the medication expert. And so that's where that comes in. The other area where it gets into my realm, especially, is instead of anorexia or, you know, bulimia per se, is, have you ever heard of the term diabulimia?
I've heard of it, but I don't know what it is.
So it's basically kind of a bulimic disorder of people with type 1 diabetes, where they don't make insulin from their pancreas, right? They need insulin therapy. And if they don't take insulin, their sugars are up. They're very catabolic, meaning their muscles and fat are often breaking down. That's why people lose weights, because they end up essentially urinating out their sugar. And so sometimes when it seems like someone isn't really being compliant, the term compliant, if they're not doing good self-management, but they can, they have the tools, they have the insulin, they have the plan, but they're not, and they're struggling, you know, it seems like they're losing too much weight, they may be purposefully or subconsciously or whatever that is, missing or minimizing their insulin dosing because of, you know, body dysmorphia or whatever might be driving that. And so that's something, you know, everyone needs to be aware of. So if anybody with type 1 diabetes is listening to this and might have those struggles, please, you know, reach out to somebody, your endocrinologist, your primary care, your psychologist, counselor, whatever it is. And if there are, you know, other clinicians listening, we have to be very well aware of that, because that might be more common than we realize.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And you mentioned that you're seeing a lot more patients maybe with binge eating disorder, mm-hmm. specifically, rather than someone with anorexia, mm-hmm. because of the weight gain. And yeah. You can tell that there's weight gain there. I've done a lot of research for the podcast, and I now know that binge eating disorder is the most common eating mm-hmm. disorder in America. That makes sense. I think bulimia is almost this more hidden disease, where me personally, my weight has been pretty regulated throughout my life. Mm-hmm. It's kind of been, I've been suffering in silence, because to mm-hmm. my doctor, my weight has seemed pretty normal. There's never been a reason for them to really ask me about weight fluctuations, because I've never really had any. Mm-hmm. So I really just encourage anyone listening to this who might be suffering from bulimia to make sure that you're talking to your doctor. The first step is talking to someone to be getting that help. And when I started talking to my doctor, talking to my therapist, wanting to get the help, I began a really amazing healing journey for myself that I'm on now.
Yeah. And that's a, you know, that's a good point. Because as I recall, the general clinical presentation for most bulimic disorders, you're not losing tons of weight. It is more of a weight stable thing, right? Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, I reiterate in the episodes that I'm not a doctor. I'm not an expert on bulimia in general, but I am an expert with my own experience. So mm-hmm. I'm here to share exactly what I've learned so people can hopefully relate and take away things that I've learned. You mentioned your podcast, Docs Who Lift. For my listeners that are new to your podcast, I want to hear more about it. What can they expect from your episodes? You co-host with your brother, Dr. Spencer Nadolski.
Yeah.
What are you two talking about in the podcast?
Yeah. So it's funny. The story of that is, I'm a little bit older than he is. I'm like 4.5 years older. So I totally missed the whole millennial thing. Right. So I make fun of him for being a millennial, no offense, because there are lots of millennials listening to this, but you know, we're pretty lighthearted. And, so he's the tech guru. And then he went on, after med school and all that stuff, really does a great job with social media, passing along appropriate, like, medical teaching type stuff on social media through, like, humor. I do a lot of it too, but he really took it to a whole nother level. And so over the, really the past 15 years, it seems like since I graduated from med school, we're often asked to be on podcasts. He's done a ton of them, but I get asked to be on a lot of podcasts, and we make the time to do them and all that stuff. And finally he said, we always do this. Why don't we just make our own? And I said, yeah, I'm up for that. You just got to figure out how to do it, because you're the technical guy. And so we started about a year and a half ago, because we do so much public awareness and education on especially things like obesity, diabetes, and metabolic health. but then felt like it was a good forum to expand beyond into all sorts of little detailed nuances of medical things that really get a lot of bad awareness online. You know, I mean, if you look on social media, oh my God, the misinformation out there is horrible. I hate to say it for anybody, any TikTok fans out there, but TikTok is a dumpster fire of misinformation, and people hate when we provide good information, but someone's got to do it. And so we try our best. And, you know, we love to learn from other experts too. And because we don't know everything, we have a very good expertise in, you know, endocrine for me. He's a family practice doc who specializes in obesity and lipids. And so obviously we feel very comfortable with that stuff, but we dig into all sorts of things, ranging from, you know, medical problems to, you know, to fitness and nuances beyond what's even in our wheelhouse. So all sorts of little nuggets we talk about, but we always try to emphasize good lifestyle efforts, you know, again, that holistic aspect, nutrition, exercise, physical fitness, you know, mind, body, spirit kind of stuff, but also teaching people the best truths we can about real medicine, surgery, or whatever it is.
I like that you say that there's a lot of misinformation out there. I think I can call a lot of BS on the YouTube page when I see it. But for someone who might just take a TikTok as truth, mm-hmm. how can they really differentiate and sort through all of this information overload they're getting on their cell phone screens?
It's tough. And I'll tell you, unfortunately, there is no area of expertise that is immune to the like quackery and spread of misinformation. There are plenty of physicians who do it of all different specialties for some reason. And, you know, and then it goes on down to, you know, a little bit more of the stereotypical types of experts. I hate to say it, but, you know, there are a fair amount of like chiropractors and naturopaths, and but also dietitians, exercise, fitness people, really, they may not have the education in certain things. And then if it seems like someone is trying to spread absolute truths that aren't in their specialty realm, first of all, you know, so if a fitness person is talking about medicine, if a dietitian is talking about, you know, whatever, if a cardiologist is talking about orthopedics, if an orthopedic guy is talking about endocrine things, one, that should be a red flag. Doesn't mean they're wrong. That, you know, maybe they're just spreading good awareness. Like, you know, we're not infectious disease doctors, but we spread what we felt was trustworthy information about COVID because there was so much information about that. And people said, well, you're not an infectious disease doctor. And I said, well, yeah, but I'm spreading where I know I trust these trustworthy sources. And then the other red flag would be is if it seems either counterintuitive or seems against what is generally mainstream, like stuff that you hear about. And that doesn't always mean everything at the forefront of mainstream medicine is right on the money, because it takes time for scientific research to change what, you know, is like, you know, kind of standard of care and how we do things. But at least that provides a red flag. And so, and there's tons of it. And like I said, there are cardiologists, you know, 1% of cardiologists maybe will say things that are just absolutely not true because they have some sort of bias for like keto diets or something. So then they say, oh, LDL lipids don't matter, just because a lot of keto diets increase LDL and cardiovascular risk. Well, they just don't want that to be true because they have that bias and conflict of interest. So you got to be careful. There's more nuance. It also, if they're very absolute, that's sometimes a red flag. Sometimes things are absolute, but if they don't kind of at least open up about there's some nuance to things and we don't always know everything, or if they are obviously not trained or whatever in whatever expertise they're spouting, or they pretend to be an expert in something they are obviously not, that should be a little bit of a red flag.
Oh yeah.
And at least, you know, double check, look at resources, look for other resources. Don't get sucked into one. And if it seems extreme too, extremism is what gets the most noise, unfortunately, gets the most traction. If it seems extreme, take it with a grain of salt, look deeper into it, see what other maybe more mainstream or trustworthy, you know, medical experts are talking about.
You guys heard it here. Go to your doctor, go to the experts. Do not trust your TikTok as truth. Before we wrap up this first segment, what are you working on now or next? What are you excited for?
Well, so like I said, we did just recently publish, and I can't remember if I talked to you before or after, the American Association of Clinical Endocrinology's position state or consensus statement on the diagnosis and staging of stigma, of obesity bias and stigma. So that's, you know, for those interested in that, that's an endocrine practice from, you know, this past month. So we published and presented that. And really, that's more just more about for people who are struggling with obesity. We're trying to raise awareness that there is a struggle with internalized weight bias and stigma. You know, we might be able to do some things with that. If you listen to our most recent podcast with, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy, but we also need to, clinicians need to be aware of it to help people. And so let them know if you're feeling some of those, you know, self-guilt or whatnot, or feeling biased from other people. And then other stuff I'm working on right now is, you know, we are working on some clinical practice algorithms for helping people with obesity. And otherwise, I'm in Holland, Michigan, working on Holland Hospital's new endocrine department and trying to build that into, you know, something special and try to spread our net wider and help more people around our region.
Oh, that's amazing. And Holland, Michigan itself is such a beautiful place to be, especially those Michigan summers. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'll have to get back there soon, but let's get into the next segment of the show. So for segment number two, I like to wrap up my interviews with two questions. One is a recommendation and the other is a positive self-affirmation. Recommendations can be anything. I like to recommend what I'm enjoying or what I'm liking. In the last episode, I recommended a creator that I follow, and I also recommended a cell phone app for tracking your menstrual cycles. So for you, Dr. Carl, what are we thinking as a recommendation? And if you have many, I would love to hear them all. So if it's even like a weightlifting technique, anything like that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. So I have lots of recommendations, but I'll tell you, like I said, really we want people of all types, or, you know, with all sorts of backgrounds and medical struggles, medical issues, or prevention type strategies. So people who don't have any issues, we want everyone to at least be mindful of and work on their nutrition, their physical activity, exercise, which doesn't always have to be specific exercise. Some people have a lot of physical barriers, but try to get in some sort of aerobic exercise, walking, swimming, biking, whatever it is. And of course, I'm a shill for weight training. I think everyone needs to do some sort of weight training. Look for help, ask a trusted personal trainer, a physical therapist, exercise specialist, learn. And it doesn't have to be crazy stuff. Very basic, simple weight training from the time you're a little bitty kid to the eldest of the elderly need to do some sort of weight training and get outside and enjoy life, whatever that may be. Playing outside, doing water sports, hiking, just be outside and enjoy our world.
That's great advice. That makes me think of my retired parents. You know, they raised my sister and I in East Lansing. They are now in Central Florida, and they're loving retired life. And my dad is in his mid-60s and has had a triple bypass before. He's actually had both hips replaced. He's had his knee replaced. So he's kind of a bionic man. But right now, I mean, he's really soaking up his newfound health. He's walking all of the time as much as he can. Wow. He's swimming. I'm really proud of him. My mom's
awesome.
Really active, but I don't see my parents do so much weight training in their mid-60s now. What would your suggestion be for them?
I would say, you know, talk to somebody about just finding a way to get anything in, and it can be done at home. It can be really simple, silly, basic stuff, ranging from push-ups on your knees to buying a rubber band kit and doing pulling exercises, you know, rowing type exercises. It doesn't have to be, you know, weighted pull-ups or anything like that. It doesn't have to be going to a gym. But on the other hand, a lot of gyms have really nice very simple circuits set up for people to just learn, you know, pushing and pulling exercises. Really keep it simple, get something in a couple times a week. Doesn't have to be long, highly intensive stuff. Just learn the basics, get it in, find a way.
Mom and Dad, I know you listen to these episodes, so keep that in mind. Okay, my next question is a positive self-affirmation. And for this, I like to wrap up these episodes with this because my entire message is we need more self-love. I spent so many years not loving myself, and I'm on a self-love journey. I sign off all of my daily journal entries with I love you. So what is a positive self-affirmation you have or love about yourself?
Well, I think I definitely love that I do very genuinely and sincerely care about patients and people. And, I think that's why most people get into medicine. Unfortunately, like I said, our dysfunctional healthcare system does a lot of burnout to people. People even accuse doctors of being shills for big pharma or whatever it is, all this crazy stuff. But most just are in it for people. And I really do feel that way. I feel like I've made some sacrifices in life to do what I think is right and care for people. Nothing's perfect. I'm sure as heck not perfect. Nobody's perfect. The system's not perfect, but at least if we all try to work together, I think that's good. And I guess I'm proud of myself for making sure I put that people first.
Just from following you on social media, I think that message really comes through. I appreciate all of the information you've given. It's been super helpful and informative. I hope it comes across to whoever's listening, whether it's someone suffering who maybe is going to go to their doctor and talk to their doctor more now, or a clinician themselves that has found this episode interesting. I really appreciate it. Now it's time to go on the Docs Who Lived podcast.
Absolutely. Coming right up.
I have had the pleasure of editing this conversation and being able to listen back and absorb more about what Dr. Carl said. If you're someone who can relate to this conversation and you haven't yet gone to your doctor to talk about your options, I definitely recommend getting in where you can. I think it's a really important first step on our healing journey. For those who are new here that come from following Dr. Carl or Dr. Spencer, welcome. Thank you for listening. If you know someone suffering from an eating disorder, I would love for you to share this podcast with them. I put out episodes so far that I think will help people that are going through similar situations that I've been through and learned from. So far, the series has included conversations with my parents, my therapist, my old roommate, other survivors, and lots of solo episodes where I'm just talking to you all like it's one of my journal entries. If you liked this episode, please subscribe and can follow me on Instagram at The Eating Disorder Diaries for updates. And DM me and tell me where you're from. I love connecting with you guys. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks, normal schedule this time on Tuesday, July 18th. This podcast was written and produced by me, Amy Geckel, with music from Coma Media. If you want someone to talk to besides DMing me on Instagram, you can email me at theeatingdisorderdiaries@gmail.com. I always respond there as well. Remember that a life in recovery is possible, and if you're suffering, you're not alone. Take care of yourselves, and I'll talk to you in the next episode.